Greetings. Welcome back to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, here on WILL AM 580, Urbana, Illinois, coming to you live today, October 12th, 2003. And we're going to be talking about the O'Reilly Factor, the television news program that's certainly gotten its share of attention over the past few years. Our guest is going to be Peter Hart, the activism director at Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, the National Media Watchdog Group. Peter is also the co-host and producer of Fair's radio show, Counterspin. Previously, Peter was a member of the Paper Tiger Television Collective in New York City. He lectures regularly on college campuses and to community groups and has been interviewed by a number of media outlets, including NBC News, LA Times, Newsday, the Associated Press, and the O'Reilly Factor. Most recently, and what we're going to be talking about today, Peter is the author of The O'Reilly Factor, Unspinning Fox News Channel's Bill O'Reilly, a book that uses facts and humor to challenge statements made by the country's most watched cable news host. Peter, are you there?
I sure am.
Well, I want to thank you very much for joining us today on Media Matters, taking time off from your Sunday.
It's my pleasure.
And I want to let everyone know, just so there's no confusion, I had the privilege of writing the foreword to this book, The O'Reilly Factor, so there's an editorial connection here, but I get no royalties, so I have no commercial incentive for this show. But it's a pleasure to have you here.
It's my pleasure, actually.
You know, Bill O'Reilly, we probably have some listeners who aren't familiar with him and aren't familiar with the O'Reilly Factor. Maybe they don't have cable or satellite, or they just don't have something else to do with their lives. What is the O'Reilly Factor? What is this show? Why did you decide to write a book about it?
Yeah, it's at the moment the most popular cable news show, really by far. It's worth mentioning, of course, that means that there are a fraction of the people who watch Tom Brokaw on one night will watch The O'Reilly Factor. So it's good to put the ratings in perspective. But Bill O'Reilly comes from network news. His previous experience following his network experience was on a tabloidy infotainment show called Inside Edition. And when Fox News Channel launched in 1996, so did something called The O'Reilly Report, which, of course, was changed to The O'Reilly Factor. It's very kind of rough and tumble, combative program every night. And the idea is that the host is coming at the show with some very strong opinions that inform the interviews and the commentary that he delivers. And we decided to look at whether or not the comments that he was giving were backed up by facts or backed up by sort of the inaccuracies, I guess would be the best way to put it. And so the book looks at the inaccuracies and the inconsistencies and some of the deception that make up the O'Reilly Factor every night. And really, it goes without saying that I think almost any night of the week, if you watch the show, there's some shading of the truth, there's some claim that isn't supported by the evidence, that sort of thing. So we decided to catalog a lot of that and give people some idea of what's going on the most popular cable news program in the country right now.
Now, is O'Reilly just a guy who shoots from the hip and has some goofy opinions or maybe great opinions, but they're sort of erratic and all over the place? Or does he have a coherent political project or philosophy? What's your sense of him?
Well, that's the interesting part about him, and I think about Fox in general. You know, as people know Fox News Channel, they know that they have some very clever slogans, but they're designed to deflect attention away from what I think is a very obvious political slant. Fox News was started by a conservative media mogul. It was staffed with well-known conservatives. And I think the editorial product leans to the right in the commentaries and in the opinions that are expressed, and also in the story selection. Their most famous slogan is, "We Report, You Decide," which is probably the most bizarre of all of their marketing schemes, because it makes no logical sense. Reporters decide what to report. Viewers don't have any say in that. So it's I think Fox has a coherent political strategy, and Bill O'Reilly fits nicely into that as a fellow conservative with a couple of quirks. But all in all, I don't think they distract from his overall conservative or right-wing philosophy. And we deal with that to some length in the book, only because he denies that he has one. And I think that's the most peculiar part of it. There'd be no problem with him being a conservative, of course, and there isn't any problem with him. The strange thing is that he denies that that's what he is, rather vigorously. So we decided to start the book off, really, with some discussion of his political philosophy, since it's something that he denies even exists.
Well, we're talking to Peter Hart today, the author of the new book, The O'Reilly Factor, Unspinning Fox News Channel's Bill O'Reilly. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, on Media Matters. If you'd like to call in and talk with Peter Hart, the number here is 333-9455, our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Peter, now, Bill O'Reilly, you say, is by all rights a conservative, but he protests that he is not a conservative. What are some examples of his conservatism? I mean, general examples. And then what are some of the exceptions he would throw up or provide to say that, see, I'm really not a conservative?
I think O'Reilly, you have to judge him by the subjects that he takes up on the show with some passion. And that's probably the best way to define where he's coming from. He was probably the most passionate advocate for Bush's tax cuts, a passionate advocate for the war in Iraq. On a host of other matters, I think he expresses what could only be considered conservative opinions. He wants to drill for oil in Alaska.
Let me interrupt you. Let me put it another way then. So far, it sounds like he's lining up behind President Bush on all the major issues of our times. Are there issues where he's criticized the president, where he's gone after him, been especially critical, where he's distinguished his political viewpoint from that of the president?
I think so. And the odd part is that they're usually from Bush's right. He thinks that Bush hasn't been tough enough on immigration, for example. O'Reilly advocates for putting troops at the border, particularly the border with Mexico, to stop them from coming in. He actually used a racial slur during one of his programs to describe people who cross the border. Used the term wetbacks on the air, and then blamed it on the guest, which was, I think, pretty brave. O'Reilly isn't crazy about Bush's education plan, because I think he thinks that it supports public education too much, throws too much money at the public school, quote-unquote bureaucracy. Those are the kinds of issues where he seems to polarize with Bush. He polarized, likewise, with John Ashcroft, not over the Patriot Act or anything of real importance, but he thought Ashcroft wasn't doing enough to investigate the Clinton, you know, Mark Rich pardon, some of the Clinton-era shenanigans. So you do see him sort of split with the Bush administration, but it's usually coming from their right, and I think that's instructive. If you look at the enemies that O'Reilly has developed over the years, all of them are Democrats or liberal figures, folks like Jesse Jackson, Tom Daschle, Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton. At the moment, he's really on the warpath against the ACLU for being a dangerous left-wing organization. So since most of the show is defined by his anger and how he vents it, it's important to note who he thinks are the real dangers to our society. And strangely enough, they all happen to be people to his left. It goes without saying that there's a lot of political ground to his left, but that's where he finds his targets.
Are there any Republicans on his target list?
You know, I spent months and months reading transcripts, and there have been a couple of occasions where he has criticized some Republicans, but not to the same extent. When Senator Rick Santorum, Republican from Pennsylvania, likened homosexuality to bestiality, O'Reilly didn't agree with that, but said that Santorum obviously has a right to say that, and then launched into an attack on gay rights activists, which I think is pretty typical O'Reilly. What starts out as criticism, perhaps, of a Republican turns into criticism of a Democrat or liberal interest group. So that's sort of par for the course. He did the same thing when people were criticizing John Ashcroft during the nomination hearings when he was up for the job of Attorney General. Didn't like some of what Ashcroft had to say, but saved his real anger, his real fire for Dianne Feinstein and Ted Kennedy, people like that.
Why do you think the show's so popular? I mean, I should preface this by saying I assume you have watched countless hours of the program, so you're quite familiar with the shtick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's good television. I think there's probably two things. He knows how to do television. He knows how to blend, I think, a pretty hard right political orientation with some of the tabloid instincts that he probably has from Inside Edition. So you'll watch the show one night, and it'll be about attacks on Rush Limbaugh from the likes of Jesse Jackson. And they'll mix in a story about people going topless in London or something. So I think he knows how to do an appealing, fast-paced show. He has passionate opinions, and I think that's good to see on television. I wish there were more of that. I just wish the opinions were a little bit more varied. And finally, I think he delivers a message that a certain segment of Fox's audience loves to hear. I mean, there are people out there that want to hear reasons why they should dislike the ACLU and Jesse Jackson every night. And they deliver that on Fox. There's actually been, I remember reading an article a few months ago, and producers at Fox call it feeding the core. And they know that their audience is sort of a hard right core audience, and they know that they have to give them content that they're going to enjoy. So I think all of those things together make for a pretty interesting show, and certainly one that people will watch. It's worth saying, I guess, that from the looks of the mail segment at the end of the show every night, there are quite a few people who watch O'Reilly and the O'Reilly Factor who can't stand him, but I think they identify with watching entertaining television. I know I find it pretty entertaining on every night. I disagree with most of what he says, but they know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to Peter Hart today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. Peter Hart is the author of the new book, The O'Reilly Factor, Unspinning Fox News Channel's Bill O'Reilly. Just came out. It's just a few weeks old, isn't it, Peter?
Yeah, it actually came out on the 23rd, the same day as Bill O'Reilly's new book.
Hey, I wonder which one's going to get the most attention on The O'Reilly Factor. And if you'd like to call in and talk with Peter, have a question or comment, the number here, 333-9455, the toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Let's go to the phone lines now. Champaign County, you're on the air with Peter Hart.
Hi.
Hi.
Fair did a study of Limbaugh a while back. I don't know if that book's still available, but it might be a good time to pitch it as well, considering. And maybe you want to add that on at the end, but I do have... I understand that O'Reilly walked out on Terry Gross, who's known for pretty much softballs. I think he said that you were nicer to Al Franken or something. They were doing a thing where they had it back and forth. It's not on in this market anymore, but I don't remember where I heard anybody recounting it. But did you do you think that was sort of marketing, basically? He can say he walked out on NPR, and that's sort of, how calculating is he as opposed to, do you think he really had a visceral reaction to being that close to Terry Gross or whatever?
Yeah, I think you hit on at least part of the answer there. I think there is something to do with marketing here. O'Reilly has always positioned himself as being, too hot for NPR. Made a big deal about it on a show a couple years ago that NPR wouldn't interview him, which was false, but nonetheless, they kind of had a mini drive to get O'Reilly on to NPR. It ended up working. He ended up getting an hour on Talk of the Nation. But I think there's something odd about walking out of an interview when it probably was near complete anyway. I think they were near the 50th minute when O'Reilly stormed off. He did so when she started to read a bit from a critical review of his book from People magazine, that notoriously critical journal, and I do think that there's something calculating about it. The following night, or maybe two nights after, O'Reilly did a segment about investigating the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and eventually defunding NPR, which is something he's kind of gone off on in the past. He wants Bill Moyers to be balanced on PBS with either Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity are his suggestions. So I think it was all pretty calculated, and there's something kind of humorous and ironic about the idea that this guy can't stand to be grilled by the likes of Terry Gross, a guy who calls his opponents pinheads and tells them to shut up, can't sit for an hour interview with Terry Gross. There's something funny about that, I think.
Well, caller, do you have any more comments you'd like to make?
Oh, well, I don't actually have cable right now, so I don't have... Fox is in the lowest tier. Maybe some general remarks about... He is very listened, but CNN isn't on the basic tier in this community, so I wonder how much of it is... Just something on the demographics. I don't know. I've heard things about how MSNBC is, you know, touted as being some kind of success, but it actually it has a viewing audience only double the size of Champaign-Urbana or something like that on an hourly basis or some such. And
yeah, it's always important to remember that when we talk about how Fox or any other cable network is really shooting ahead in the ratings, we're still talking about a pretty small audience. A couple of weeks ago, I think there was a good story in the Chicago Tribune explaining that as hot as Fox is, local news in Chicago, puts them away. And the same thing is in New York. I think more people watch the 11 o'clock CBS affiliate than ever watch Fox News Channel or CNN in that time slot. So it's important to remember that as hot as these guys are, they're still relatively, we're talking about a small audience. The interesting thing, I think, and the thing that's worth remembering is that this gets back to the way the media system in this country is structured. You have a small audience that you're going after so that you can deliver them to advertisers who covet that audience. And in the end, MSNBC will put a bigot on the air like Michael Savage, or they'll go with someone like Joe Scarborough, a former Republican congressman, and give him an hour-long show in the hopes that they can steal away just a tiny bit of that coveted audience. And in the end, you have to remember that they're fighting over these tiny slices of the pie just because the people who pay the bills to keep the lights on want to sell their products to that audience. And I think it's important to remember that in the end, they're fighting over a small audience, but they're kind of degrading and distorting what news and journalism and public affairs are supposed to be about, you know, in the race for ratings.
Peter Hart, our guest today on Media Matters. That's who you've been listening to. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. Peter is the author of the brand new book, The O'Reilly Factor, Unspinning Fox News Channel's Bill O'Reilly. He's also the co-host of the weekly radio program Counterspin, which is carried locally on WEFT from 5:30 to 6 on Wednesdays. You know, one thing, Peter, that caller got at is this idea of Bill O'Reilly being a bully. And I think as I read your book, I mean, that's one of the things that really jumped out was that this guy, he doesn't like a level playing field for an argument. I mean, he definitely likes to be sitting in the big chair while you're sitting on the ground next to him when he gets into an argument. And, you know, this, of course, goes to a lot of the publicity O'Reilly's been receiving unfavorably in the last month or two about his relations with Al Franken. And Franken, of course, has the new book out, Lies and the Lying Liars Who Tell Them, and was sued by Fox News for stealing their slogan in the subtitle of the book. And he has had major run-ins with Franken. I mean, is being a bully part of your shtick, or is he genuinely just not, you know, just like to be a bully?
It's probably hard to separate where that begins and ends, you know, where his natural bulliness is an act or whether or not it's really him. I think he does have a complex. I think he and if you read his first book, you get this sense that he's always felt like people were out to get him. And watching the show, you definitely get that impression. So I think he's so hypersensitive about criticism and about coming out on top that when he's threatened, when he's dealing with a guest that might present a coherent opposing viewpoint, and he gets angry, and he'll call you names and talk over you and that sort of thing.
I mean, there are instances in the book that are really striking where he's just shouting people down and not giving them an opportunity to respond.
Yeah, and that happens on the show when these people are invited. It is worth mentioning that O'Reilly does bring on people that he disagrees with rather strikingly, and I think that gives him some credit where somebody like a Rush Limbaugh is much happier to never confront opponents. O'Reilly enjoys it. It's the way he deals with them and the inability to have a reasonable difference of opinion with him without being called a name or being told to shut up and that sort of thing. I think that is what distinguishes his show. Maybe the audience enjoys watching him yell at people and threaten to turn off people's mics. I have no idea if that's if they're just playing to that audience. But, I mean, he's a passionate guy, and he gets angry. The interesting thing about the Franken deal is that you get the sense that he doesn't, as much as he likes to entertain critics and argue with them, I don't think he wants to debate Franken. And I think the reason is because Al Franken is right about what he puts in his book about Bill O'Reilly. And that's not a discussion he wants to have. So he'll call Al Franken a smear merchant, and he'll engineer a lawsuit against Franken under the most ridiculous interpretation of copyright law just to try to silence him. I think he doesn't like dealing with people who might be correct and who might prove him wrong.
Franken is
that guy.
In fact, for those of our listeners who do not get cable or satellite television but who get over-the-air TV, last week Al Franken was on the Jay Leno show, I think shortly before Leno went off to the Schwarzenegger celebration, and he said, look, you're going to have Bill O'Reilly on the show next week. When he's here, challenge him to come up with one falsehood in the chapter I wrote about him in my book and do it over the air. You know, so he made the challenge over the air. So when O'Reilly is on the Leno show this coming week, people can watch for that to see how O'Reilly responds to that challenge. Our guest today, Peter Hart, the author of the new book, The O'Reilly Factor, here on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. If you'd like to call in, we have phone lines open. The number is 333-9455. Our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Let's go to that line right now. Bloomington, Illinois, you're on the air with Peter Hart.
Hi. About the Terry Gross interview, I happened to hear that, and I agree with you. It was he had set it up in advance. I'm almost positive he decided he was going to walk out. And Terry Gross was as civil as she usually is. And toward the end, 5 minutes into it, she asked him an innocuous question about someone who had reviewed his book unfavorably and why he attacked this reviewer on TV. And he just used that as an excuse to grandstand and walk off the show. He was also, although we hadn't heard her interview the week before with Al Franken, he was absolutely positive that Terry Gross had favored him and had asked him much more softball questions than she had asked him, and so on. Let me just ask a more general question about O'Reilly and his peers on TV and radio. It seems to me that the right wing has such an incredible lock these days on television and radio that it makes it almost impossible for any Democrat to win, because when the Democrat is nominated, and even before for president, there is going to be Katie bar the door, there's going to be an absolute onslaught from cable TV and radio. And this, to me, seems like an almost insuperable obstacle for Democratic or liberal candidates. What do you think about that?
I mean, I think it's a good point. You obviously understand that the media being what it is right now, you're going to face much more criticism than any Republican candidate. When the Democrats were running the 2000 primaries, O'Reilly referred to Bill Bradley as a socialist and Al Gore as a quasi-socialist.
Yeah.
He thinks Hillary Clinton is a socialist, which, you know, are all completely insane political orientations to attribute to them. But nonetheless, this is the level of criticism that's leveled against Democrats by somebody who pretends to be nonpartisan. Just imagine what real hardcore movement GOP types like Sean Hannity would have to say. That being said, you know, Al Gore, I think by all technical definitions, did in fact win the 2000 election. So it's pretty insurmountable odds, but I don't think it's impossible. And, you know, even in the straight media, outside the conservative cable networks and talk radio, Gore got much tougher coverage than Bush did from the likes of the New York Times, the LA Times, supposedly liberal newspapers like that. Like
now, Peter, are there surveys to indicate that or studies that people could look at? Because people, you know, I'll say that or you'll say that, someone will say that. So how do you know that?
I mean, where yeah, there have been a couple. I mean, a lot of them rely on anecdotes, but there were a few studies that were a bit more exhaustive and tried to tally critical coverage or negative stories versus relatively positive ones. And I think the Project on Excellence in Journalism did one, so that's probably available somewhere online. It's I think you can kind of blend the two different types of research on that and come to a pretty reasonable conclusion. And there were journalists themselves, you know, people like Cokie Roberts, who said the way we covered the election was, you know, the model for the media throughout the campaign was that Bush isn't quite smart enough and Gore doesn't tell the truth. So you saw an overwhelming focus on Gore not telling the truth, even when the stories themselves were false about what Gore had said. And the stories about Bush not being smart enough usually revolved around Bush surrounding himself with intelligent people who would kind of counsel him and tutor him on things. So it was framed as a weakness that he was dealing with. You know, he surrounded himself with the likes of Cheney and that crowd, and that really gave his campaign a boost. Whereas, you know, for the media, Gore couldn't stop telling little fibs. And, you know, anyone who went and tried to evaluate those stories came to the conclusion that Gore was by and large telling the truth about these things. It was just a media prime to exploit some of these stories. But, you know, with the rise of Fox News and, you know, the continuing domination of the right wing and talk radio and that sort of thing, and syndicated newspaper columns, it does make it more difficult for Democrats to compete. But, you know, a country that's relatively split along partisan lines, the votes are always going to be close. I think the media, unfortunately, sometimes make the difference.
We're talking to Peter Hart today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. Peter Hart's the author of The O'Reilly Factor, Unspinning Fox News Channel's Bill O'Reilly. He's also the co-host of the radio program Counterspin, which can be heard locally on WEFT 5:30 to 6 every Wednesday afternoon or early evening. Peter works for the group Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, where he serves as activist and director. Peter, you've been there for a long time now, haven't you?
7 years.
7 years, my God, yeah. That's a long stretch. And if you'd like to call in, the number here is 333-9455. Our toll-free line is open, 1-800-222-9455. I might add, in the next 3 weeks on Media Matters, our guests will include next week John Nichols, the editorial page editor of the Cap Times in Madison and a national correspondent for The Nation magazine and a longtime guest on this program. 2 weeks from today, Joe Connison, the author of another new book, critical of the Bush administration and conservative media. And 3 weeks from today, Katrina Vandenhoevel, editor of The Nation magazine. So this is where you get your counterbalance for the next few weeks to the O'Reilly Factor and other programs of that ilk. Let's go back to the phone lines right now. Urbana, you're on the air with Peter Hart.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi.
I just had an observation on the him being a bully. I had never really heard of O'Reilly until a few months ago before the Iraq War, and Fox had hired us to feed an interview to their show, and it was from the studios downstairs, and there was a young man who was a Muslim, and from what I saw, he got him on the air, and first he baited the young man with some questions and got him upset, and then after that was done, then accused him of being emotional and illogical in his arguments. And I didn't know anything about O'Reilly, but after just that one incident, then I've seen the show a few times and know a little bit more about him. And really saw, I guess, firsthand how he operates.
All right. Well, thank you very much, caller. Peter, do you have any comments on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the idea, is to throw off guests who he disagrees with. The first time I was on the show, before we went on the air, he was looking at his notes and told me that I'd regret ever coming on to program, which is, you know, probably the oldest tactic in the book if you want to make somebody nervous or, you know, get them kind of worked up. And yeah, that's what he does. It was a young man who, and probably the most infamous recent incident, there was a young man whose father died on September 11th in the World Trade Center. And he opposed the bombing of Afghanistan and opposed the war in Iraq. And O'Reilly brought him on just to beat him up for the position. And really, really disgusting, you know, invoked his father's memory and said he would not continue to dress him down out of respect for his father. told the kid on the air that he hoped his mother wasn't watching. Really kind of sick stuff, and then cut the interview short. Basically told them that they were done, cut his mic. And, you know, this is the kind of thing that he does. And oddly enough, has turned back to that interview on his show in the last couple of weeks and continues to misrepresent what the guy said. So that, you know, we had to cut it short because he was saying that the Bush administration knew about the attacks in advance. He never said that. He doesn't actually believe that. But that's the kind of thing that O'Reilly does. You know, he'll slam you on the air, cut you off, end the interview early, and then continue to talk about you and accuse you falsely of saying things you've never said. Not quite an equal playing field, but that's what the O'Reilly factor, I think, is all about.
You know, Peter, one of the big stories of this year has been how the Bush administration claimed for going to war concerning the terrorists linked to Saddam Hussein, concerning weapons of mass destruction. These claims, or at least strong insinuations, have not borne out, and they're now turning and running from them. Has this bothered O'Reilly? I mean, has he been after the scalp of Bush and Cheney on sort of deception? And after you answer that, I mean, remind me, if you will, how did he handle President Clinton's relationship with Monica Lewinsky and his lying about his relationship with Monica Lewinsky?
Yeah, I mean, O'Reilly maybe carelessly said in March on Good Morning America that if the Bush administration invaded Iraq and Iraq had no weapons of mass destruction, O'Reilly said that he would apologize for supporting the war on the air and he would never trust the Bush administration again. O'Reilly, as we said earlier, was a passionate advocate for the war, backed the Bush administration's idea that there were weapons of mass destruction, though he was kind of inconsistent about it. First he said they didn't have any, or at least he didn't know that they had any. Then he changed that position and said, absolutely, this guy's got VX and nerve gas and that kind of thing. O'Reilly came up with a couple of very creative and false reasons for going to war. Otherwise, he cited the Gulf War Treaty from 91 as giving us legal cover to reinvade. It's completely false. But so he was a strongly supportive of the war. And now that things have gone astray in the sense that we can't seem to find these weapons, you would think, as somebody who's very hard on political officials, very very demanding, always demands the truth, you would think that he would be angry with them and he would be kind of leading the charge for the Bush administration to tell the people the truth and to come clean on this. And, you know, not surprisingly, he's been focusing most of his criticism on the critics of the Bush administration. So the New York Times is getting it. Robert Scheer from the LA Times has been denounced over and over again on the show. All the people who are doing exactly what O'Reilly said he would do, which is demand accountability from the White House. He just simply hasn't done that and is continuing to sort of labor on attacking the critics of the administration to a pretty surprising scale. He wanted to do a segment about MoveOn.org when they placed an ad critical of Bush in the New York Times, and he actually would not invite them on the show.
I know, he invited me instead. I couldn't do it.
He said they were propagandists, so they wouldn't be allowed on the program, which I think is fascinating because I think it suggests, kind of like how he won't debate Frank indirectly, I think he didn't want to have anyone from that group on. I think he doesn't want to have that discussion because it will make him look foolish. And that's, you know, that says something. Hasn't responded to this book yet either, despite the best efforts of the publisher to get some comment from Fox News Channel or some reaction.
What about going on just quickly to Clinton? You'll have to refresh my memory. I don't recall, but was he as generous in allowing Clinton to sort of screw up and mislead people as he's been apparently with the Bush administration?
Oh, no. He was, I think, pretty typical for conservative pundits, you know, foaming at the mouth about the deceptions of the Clinton era. Did want to at one point try Janet Reno for treason, and did come out eventually in favor of impeaching the president, though it should be said that he did so based on a completely bogus story. He went on the air and said that Clinton spokesman Joe Lockhart had said the previous day that Clinton wouldn't accept censure from the Senate. So O'Reilly said, you know, that's a flip-flop, and the man can't be trusted, so my vote is for removal. If there happened to be a Senator O'Reilly, he would have voted for removal. And the odd part about this is that that's the opposite of what Lockhart said. And, you know, we show that in the book, that you just go to the transcripts. And Lockhart said over and over again at this press briefing that Clinton would still accept censure from the Senate. That's up to the Senate to do that. Even Fox News Channel reported it that way. So O'Reilly found a reason to vote in favor of impeachment. It just happened to be completely bogus.
You know, Peter, along these lines, I mean, I do a live radio show. You do a radio show. In the course of an interview, doing a lot of talking on the air, it's pretty easy to make a mistake, to stretch the truth, to exaggerate. I've been known to do it. You probably have, too. I mean, so, you know, Riley's doing a live show 5 nights a week. He's doing a radio show. I mean, you've got to grant the guy some margin of error. Is he within that margin, or is he, like, way outside it, in your view?
I think he's outside it, and I think these aren't stray, you know, misstatements. They always come in the course of trying to justify his political beliefs. Last week on Wednesday, for example, he's been attacking the LA Times for printing stories about Arnold Schwarzenegger's alleged history of sexual assault and battery. And O'Reilly has been, you know, this should come as no surprise to anybody who watches the show, he's been attacking the LA Times for being too tough on Schwarzenegger and concocting all these tales in order to help Gray Davis remain in office. And the odd thing is that in the course of that, he said, you know, did the LA Times ever send a team of reporters down to Arkansas to investigate Clinton's problems with women? No, they did not. And it's actually completely false. The LA Times was probably the first major mainstream media outlet to do a story on what was known then as Troopergate, you know, the state troopers who were securing women for Clinton for affairs. And, you know, this is no small story. This eventually led to Paula Jones, eventually led to impeachment. So I think this just shows that O'Reilly doesn't feel the need to bother to check if any of these
claims
are true.
When this is brought to his attention, as I suspect someone must have brought this to his attention or someone at the O'Reilly Factor program's attention, will he then go on the air and do a correction and make an apology?
Well, we actually, FAIR issued an action alert. You can find these on our website. Usually that's the best place to look. But
and that's www.fair.org.
That sure is, yeah. And what we're hoping is, you know, O'Reilly gets 2,000 emails in the space of a day. Maybe he'll correct that.
But, you know, your book, The O'Reilly Factor, is filled with, I would roughly guess, 150 examples similar to that one of factual errors and significant factual errors. Is there a record of him? Does he have a correction portion of the show where he says, you know, last night I sort of stepped out of line and went over the edge on this and I want to correct that? I mean, does he do corrections on your show?
He does occasionally, and it's usually stuff that's pretty mundane, kind of run-of-the-mill. He does it at the top or sometimes at the bottom when he reads kind of the mailbag segment of the show. So there is a place for them on the show, and I think they are, you know, the conventions of journalism dictate that you do this when you've made an error. And I think there's some understanding that they have to do this from time to time. The mistakes that we put in the book, I think, are a little different because they're so central to the argument. So, for example, this one that I mentioned about the LA Times never investigating Clinton, if O'Reilly were to correct that, which he might, he would have to essentially say that his entire argument, the entire commentary he did at the top of the show, which was about the LA Times having an agenda and not pursuing the Clinton administration as toughly as they have with Schwarzenegger, if he did go on the air and say that didn't turn out to be true, that means his whole commentary has to be thrown out the window because it made no sense. You know, the one fact that sort of, you know, holds the whole thing together turns out to be false. So, you know, my guess is, you know, the conventions of journalism, as we know, dictate that you have to correct something that big. But for someone like O'Reilly, that might be too much to ask.
We're talking to Peter Hart today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. Peter is the author of the new book, The O'Reilly Factor, Unspinning Fox News Channel's Bill O'Reilly. He also works for FAIR. It can be found at www.fair.org. And he is the co-host of the show Counterspin, which I've already told you is carried on a local station, WEFT, from 5:30 to 6 on Wednesdays. Good news, it's also carried right here on WILL AM 580 in the evenings, 10:30 to 11 on Thursday night. We've got a couple of callers who've been very patient. Let's go back to the phone lines now. Niles, Michigan, you're on the air with Peter Hart.
I've seen that clip where O'Reilly tells Al Franken to shut up, and yesterday C-SPAN ran the whole show repeated, and I got out my watch and timed it. Molly Ivins and O'Reilly each spoke for just under 15 minutes. Al Franken was just under 20 minutes when O'Reilly interrupted him and said, "Shut up, you've had your 35 minutes." So he's way off on the time to start out with. And the other interesting thing, he claimed that that he mistook a Peabody for a Polk Award for the show A Current Affair, that the show won the year after he left, and Al Franken corrected him and said, "But you said I won the award. You didn't say we, like the show won the award." In other words, he was taking credit for an award that he got wrong and was a year late.
Yeah, and you know, the Franken thing, I think, is one of the main sort of factual problems that exist between Franken and O'Reilly. The other one that Franken, I think, puts a lot of emphasis on in his book is whether or not O'Reilly grew up where he said he did. These are the things that I think really, really get under his skin and make him angry.
Yeah, why don't you, for our listeners unfamiliar with this, I mean, O'Reilly's persona that he has cultivated is this sort of blue-collar, working-class kid from the other side of the tracks who's not going to put up with this hoity-toity, liberal, upper-class stuff and sort of see through the crap and get to the truth. And Franken says that is not really a genuine reflection of his upbringing?
Yeah, and Franken just borrows this from a couple of different sources. The best one is probably a report that was in the Washington Post. And, you know, a reporter just went to O'Reilly's hometown. O'Reilly says he's from Levittown, which is not really a working-class suburb. It's fairly middle-class. But Paul Farhi from the Washington Post interviewed O'Reilly's mother, and just, you know, in the course of the interview, said, "So you guys grew up in Levittown?" She said, "No, Westbury is where we grew up," which people from that area of Long Island think of as kind of a notch above Levittown. And that, so Farhi wrote it up that way, that the source for this disputed information is O'Reilly's mother. So either she's mistaken about where they lived or O'Reilly is. But I think, you know, O'Reilly uses the term Levittown because it means a certain thing to a national audience. That's his explanation. But he grew up the son of an accountant for an oil company. Not really what you'd think of when you kind of imagine a blue-collar upbringing. But he kind of labors on in this insistence that's where he comes from and that's the way he is. The interesting thing is that if you happen to read the society pages of some of the New York magazine or newspapers, he gets mentioned going to some of these hoity-toity cocktail parties and things. So he'll be at, you know, Tina Brown's house for a reception with Tom Brokaw and all the rest of them. And you can assume that O'Reilly's stomping around angrily the whole time, you know, feeling out of place. But no, I think it's a good act for the show, and it's just generally not real true.
We're talking to Peter Hart, the author of the new book, The O'Reilly Factor. We do have time for a couple more callers if people would like to call in. The number is 333-9455, the toll-free number 1-800-222-9455, and the lines are open. We ask people to be patient sometimes if they do call in. We will get to you if you do call. We do promise that. What are some other examples in the book that you write about that really talk about Bill O'Reilly's errors or misstatements? Where you go, "Oh, really?" The sort of stuff he says that got your attention and made you want to write this book.
Yeah, I think they kind of run the gamut. O'Reilly was running a boycott of French goods during the war, and so he was looking for evidence that the French are bad people or at least a bad country. And one of his items was that the French didn't support us in the bombing of Yugoslavia. He said this on at least two different occasions. The French were actually the second largest air force in that NATO campaign behind the United States. So they weren't opposing it. They were participating in it. When O'Reilly wanted to come up with some proof that the founding fathers wanted spirituality and, you know, God in public life, he found a, what seemed like a great example of Thomas Jefferson delivering this national prayer for peace. And it's a very popular story you can find on the internet, but it just happens to not be true. The Jefferson Library says it's probably the most common error that's attributed to Jefferson. They have no record of him ever writing or delivering such a speech. O'Reilly was talking about the Intifada and said it began with a suicide bombing. That's what triggered it by a Palestinian. It's not true. There actually weren't any suicide bombings for a number of months into the Intifada. These are the kind of things that come up over and over again on the show because O'Reilly is trying to support his opinion on something. And some of them are just bizarre. You know, O'Reilly claiming that there's never heard a right-winger on NPR, there's never a pro-life person on NPR, there's never an anti-global warming person on NPR. As a news outlet, you know without checking that that's a completely absurd argument, and you know, we actually did go through the trouble of making sure that there had ever been a right-winger on National Public Radio, and certainly there had been. But these are the kinds of things that he says, and you know, I think that they might seem persuasive from a guy who's so cocky and confident of himself.
Yeah, and he really is. I mean, that's part of his appeal, I think, is here's someone who really, you know, if he says it with such authority and bombast, you think, God, this guy must really have his facts together to talk this way.
Yeah, and I think that's probably the most frightening thing about it is that you can tend to believe it. And you know, at FAIR, we look at this stuff, and often mistakes and errors in the media are a little more subtle than this. And I think that's what makes him an interesting target of criticism, because his mistakes are so flagrant that it's very unusual to see somebody who's so mistaken and so obviously wrong. There are folks like Sean Hannity who are just opinionated. You might disagree with their opinions, but they don't misstate and mishandle facts to the degree that O'Reilly does.
We're talking today to Peter Hart, the author of the new book, The O'Reilly Factor. Let's go back to the phone lines. Pasotum, Illinois, you're on with Peter Hart.
Hello.
Bonjour.
I'm just wondering if either of you have a take on why people are so inclined to listen to the conservative. I know there's not much liberal on the air. I have to listen to WEF to get any kind of alternative viewpoint on things. And I just wondered if everybody takes advantage of all the liberal programs, all the FDR programs and everything, and all the corporate handouts. Why is so much of America inclined to buy into this conservative view? I mean, we've got to pay for these programs. They're great to pay for war, but they don't want to pay for the things that everybody uses every day. I know this is really a little bit off the point, but I just wondered if either of you had an opinion on it. And thank you very much. I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah, Peter, if I could just sort of restate that to get at the same thing. Why is it, do you think, that, you know, as you said, the country's pretty much split, say, Republican-Democrat, the election show, at least in the 2000 election, and certainly it's not 70-30 either way. Yet if one looks at cable news or certainly talk radio, there are now 1,500 conservative talk radio shows, as reported in the New York Times just this morning. But there are probably, you know, 2 non-conservative ones or 10. There's an enormous imbalance. What explains that?
There's so many different answers to that. I think you have to go back to the structure of the media itself. Commercial media is completely underwritten by advertisers who need an environment that will help them sell products. And, you know, give Ralph Nader a daily radio show, but try to find advertisers who will pay for it. I think they would be more worried about the content not being what they wanted it to be. It would be too critical of corporate power and that sort of thing. So I think that's one answer. I think it's also worth remembering that these things can be overstated. The popularity of these shows can be overstated. O'Reilly is very popular, but we're still talking about, you know, 3 million viewers in a country of
Okay, but more broadly, though, beyond O'Reilly, I mean, we're looking at talk radio, which, you know, reaches tens of millions of people weekly, and it's overwhelmingly right-wing.
Yeah, and I think it delivers a message that that audience wants to hear, and we've never really seen a sufficient challenge to that from the other side to understand whether or not there is an audience that would listen to explicitly liberal programming or left-wing programming. But I think with a commercial environment, you're going to get a certain kind of content, and also there are political arguments that are important. Phil Donahue's MSNBC show, for example, wasn't doing what they wanted it to do, but it was doing respectable for MSNBC. They pulled that show, they pulled the plug, because they knew they didn't want an anti-war host on in the middle of a war.
Has that been documented, or is that just sort of rumor?
Yeah, that's actually come out from memos that were circulating inside NBC for management down to the show and everywhere in between, inside of General Electric. They knew that that was not the face that they wanted to have on the air while the other networks were waving the flag. So once the show was canceled, everyone lost their jobs and all that. The memo started coming out, and they were reported in a number of different places. But I think it goes to show you that there are commercial arguments, and then sometimes there are explicitly political reasons why a show is canceled. And the lesson is very clear. Don't do that kind of show again. So, we're probably not likely to see MSNBC try it again sometime in the near future if the people upstairs who pay the bills told them in no uncertain terms that this is not the kind of show we want to have on the air.
We're talking to Peter Hart. Peter, we've only got about a minute or so left. Talk a little bit, if you will, in our closing moments about fairness and accuracy in reporting, the group you work for. We've had your program director, Janine Jackson, on as a guest before, and we hope to have her again in the future. What does FAIR do? Where is it based? How old is it? You know, some basics.
Yeah, FAIR is a national media watchdog group. We're based in New York City. There are just 5 full-time staff members, but we do a magazine called Extra, and as you've mentioned, the radio show called Counterspin. We also try to do a fair amount of media activism, which involves getting regular citizens to contact the media and try to encourage them to correct errors and to broaden the media debate. The idea behind FAIR is that we have a commercial news media that has a very limited view of what's going on in the world. And in order to broaden that view, sometimes you need pressure from the outside, pressure that comes in the form of documentation, studies, and reports on the most common topics in the news and the most common guests.
Peter, I hear the band tuning up, and that usually means it's time for me to get out of the way. If people want to learn more about FAIR, the place to go is www.fair.org. And be sure to get Peter Hart's new book, or look it up, The O'Reilly Factor, Unspinning Fox News Channel's Bill O'Reilly. Peter Hart, thanks for being my guest. And all of you, I'll see you 1 week from today. Goodbye.